Okay, we are live on LinkedIn. I'm just going to go and double check to make sure that everything is running fine. He says, yes, okay, we're good to go. So, good morning, everyone. This is the first of a series of hospitality highlights that we're going to be running every Friday. Myself and Cara and other members of the team are going to be joining you for a very quick coffee and chat. Time is valuable in hospitality. We're all running as fast as we can. So we're going to keep these very, very brief to no more than 15 minutes to talk about hot topics within the hospitality industry, both in the UK, Canada, America, Australia, and so on as well. So I'm very, very privileged to be joined here this morning by Will Gennard from Talent Hive, who is our awards sponsor, and also Anna Howe, who is also one of our judges. So and Cara Houchin, who is very, very kindly helped me put this together. So good morning, all.
Morning.
Right. So without further ado, I've already briefed you. We're going to put the timer live. I'm going to dip you in and out. So when you're talking, you're going to be having the full stage, the full experience. And the topic today is we are going to be talking about, as an industry, are we shouting about the right achievements? We're very quick to shout about accolades, and rightly so, but what about other achievements? What sort of other achievements, such as running businesses, developing team members, progression of sustainability goals and objectives as well? So, over to you. Are we shouting about the right objectives, guys? The right achievements?
Well, I think there's one element of our industry that I think could be celebrated a bit more. It might seem like an obvious one, but I do think the skills and the ingredients that we use in our restaurants is really, really important. So there are lots of ingredients on the market that we can use to get a similar result, but you don't necessarily need the skills. And it can be hard to detect that for a consumer. So a really simple example of that would be, let's say, MSG. I don't have a problem with MSG. I think it's a perfectly acceptable ingredient. So if a chef passionately thinks that they want to use MSG in their food, it should be passed on to the customer so that they know that that's in their food. And I think about the people who don't use any of those ingredients, they should be, you know, seen for doing something that's very hard to try to get flavor, try to get the skill, try to get these perfectly made dishes done, but just your hands and just with knowledge. And I think that should always be celebrated. I think it's really important because it's good for the industry, and it's also more important for kind of protecting the future of how our food is made.
Yeah. Great point.
Absolutely. Is that something you celebrate, Anna? Is that something that you do, and how do you do that?
Yeah, so I originally, when I opened up Myrtle, I kind of shyly would describe it as being, oh, you know, kind of relatable cooking, you know, we fry, we poach, we steam, and that's all I would say. But like the amount of times I've had a chef go now, where's the xanthan gone? And I'm like, don't make me swear, guys. I was like, you're not going to find that in my kitchen. Now, don't get me wrong. Xanthan gum is an ingredient that is quite important for people who have got like gluten allergy, and there is a benefit to it. So I'm not here like slating ingredients, but it's about, do you use xanthan gum to stabilize your beurre blanc? That's my point I'm making, that it's like, it's not good for you to eat too much xanthan gum unnecessarily. And the customer should know, you know, a chef that goes the extra mile to make sure that their food is made with you know, decades of skill, that it takes a long time, longer time to understand a beurre blanc than it does to make a beurre blanc with xanthan gum in it.
Yeah, and it's the time involved with those processes as well, isn't it? It's like, you know, adding stabilizers and thickening agents to stocks rather than reducing them. So yeah. You've got that balance of cost saving, but also at the same time, it's not necessarily great for us to be able to consume that level. So
yeah. And it's also about the idea that that's what our industry is kind of based on. Like, it's like when you think about artwork and a computer can draw something, you know, faster than a hand. So do we just stop hands drawing, you know, drawing? It's the idea that we have to be realistic in the effort of protecting the heritage of where dishes come from or where skills come from, as opposed to looking for a kind of quick fix that looks the same but isn't the same. And there's lots of little places doing that. It's not just fine dining. It's there's little cafes that are buying the right bread and using the right ingredients to build their sandwiches. And that should be celebrated because it does cost more money to train people, but also to buy the right ingredients.
Agreed. Will?
Well, as someone who, you know, is in the people business in recruitment, I think in terms of things we should celebrate within businesses, you know, especially coming out of COVID, we've been in the, what I kind of describe as the war of talent. You know, we lost a lot of very good people during COVID, and therefore recruitment's always been a challenge in hospitality, but even more so. So I think we should celebrate those businesses who are retaining talent, investing in talent, and actually doing the right things by their employees. One thing I do notice, what we do is, you know, I think any business owner or someone who's running any hospitality business, you know, it's heartbreaking when a valued member of the team moves on. But I think it's really important for people to celebrate them succeeding and progressing their career, because maybe that business can't offer them that next step. And I'd like to see businesses, I do see some businesses doing it, but I'd like to see more businesses looking at a long-term view and encouraging their staff to move on and experience different hospitality businesses and progress their own career. And that long-term view hopefully would pay dividends in that member of staff, you know, coming back in the future and doing other things with that business or the project with that individual. So yeah, celebrating, you know, retention of staff and developing staff would be high up there for me. Equally as important as accolades.
Nice. Well said. I mean, we're quite unique in the hospitality, certainly from a brigade point of view, because there's not really any other sectors that allow you to stage and to get an opportunity to experience what it's like in those environments. Do you think that the sort of stage concept could work in other parts of the industry as well, such as the operations directors or even CEOs?
Doing stages, why not? Yeah, it's very much, I mean, from my days in the kitchen, stages were very much getting out and seeing other people's kitchens for a day or a week, you know, usually free labor, you know, and usually you stand at the back picking spinach in my experience, but you get to see that, you know, that kitchen in full flight, and it's incredible to see other operations and learn new things. You know, we're very good at sharing knowledge and know-how within the industry. But yeah, why not? I mean, we recruit throughout other sectors. I never see stages in contract catering, for example, you know, and beyond the kitchen, you know, going to experience someone who's in one part of that sector to see what, you know, what B&I looks like, workplace catering or an operation or hospitality on a, you know, 19th floor of a bank in London, you know. But it doesn't happen, does it? It doesn't happen.
No.
Good to see. What
are your thoughts on that, Anna?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think a big thing that is never kind of sung about is the people who train people really well, who take care of them, and when they go to leave, they also support them in helping them make the next decision. These people should be really celebrated, because the advice I got as a young chef from certain chefs was really important in how I moved forward in my career. So it's about nurturing the individuals, which in the long run has a chain reaction to nurture the whole industry. So, you know, the good support isn't just for your business, it's for everybody's business. And that's why stages, when I was training, were so good. Your head chef was like, go to that kitchen, like learn something from them and come back to me. But it's like, that's really generous. You know, that's confidence. That's like nurturing. And it should be celebrated, as opposed to being competitive and jealous and insecure about if you let your staff grow that they'll fly. But they might, and then open up their own place and again help build the industry. You know, I think that's really, really good.
Great. Yeah, definitely.
Are you able to do that, Anna, with regards to stages, letting your team go off and experience other kitchens? You know, we're all quite short of staff right now.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we're all short of staff, but they also still get their days off. They can do what they like if they, you know what I mean? So, yeah. And also I don't work them to the bone, you know, sorry, excuse me. I'm sure they're down there like licking their wounds, crying in the kitchen, but you know, I don't work them to the bone. I like a healthy environment for them to work in. One of the guys is going to go for a stage in Five Fields soon. Marguerite was in the other day and he was like, oh chef, you know, do you think I could, ask Marguerite if I could go on a stage. And I was like, yeah, of course, absolutely. And I love that. Like, I think she's an incredible chef and I think it's an amazing restaurant. And I'd be proud to like send one of my guys to sniff and lick around their kitchen.
Just say, get them a look at some ideas.
Yeah, but like to get inspiration, it's like it's a completely different format and a completely different style than what we do, and that's where real kind of growth can come from, just seeing things from a different perspective. It's important.
Yeah, exactly. What about you, Cara?
I wanted to know how comfortable you both are with celebrating your own personal wins, because it's not something that comes naturally to us British, is it? Shouting about how good we are. So I just wondered how comfortable you are. Do you set champion yourself, and how do you encourage your teams to do that as well? Because it is important to celebrate when you do something really well.
Jesus, Cara, that's a great question. That's a great question, Cara, because it's very it's very hard to... I wouldn't be great at that. I am good at encouraging the guys that when you do the right thing, when you do it correctly, and the real beautiful satisfaction of knowing when you gather all those correct things together and they leave the kitchen, there's a real sense of pride and calmness. So it's not about like, yeah, we're the greatest, but there's a real feeling of, I'm going to sleep well tonight. I've done a really good job. I tried my best to make sure that customer had the best experience. So, you know, and we talk about it all the time in the kitchen about the little tiny details that we do, the little effort, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear, if you're in the bad zone you know, oysters come on. I love when I hear another section going, got it, and they run and do it. Like that for me is like, mwah. Like, you know, I'm so proud of it. But that's the end result means the customer gets the oysters faster and more likely better, because the person who made it had the brain space to make sure they can pay attention. So when stuff like that happens, I'm always high-fiving the guys. So if that's self-celebration, then all the way.
Well,
like it. Listening to Anna makes me miss kitchens, and it's been 17 years since I was in kitchens, but it does make me miss that kind of buzz. We were chatting about it the other day, weren't we, Chris, in terms of that kitchen thing. But no, in terms of, I suppose, it's hard for us to, we don't, as a recruitment business, it's probably for us to celebrate successes, you know, in an area where, unfortunately, as much as we can try and do the right thing, recruitment still doesn't have the best reputation, sadly. But yeah, we don't shout about it. We kind of try and manufacture other people to shout about us. That seems to be the thing we do through testimonials and case studies, etc. But for us to know if we've done a good job and how I get the team to really validate we're doing a good job is, you know, looking at the success rate of people we put into jobs. Are they there 12 months later? Are they progressing? There was an internal awards at one of our clients the other day, and I looked at the PDF document that came out on social medias, and there was a good proportion of the staff within that business that we've recruited for in the last 8 years who are winning awards within that business. And they've got a headcount over 1,500 staff, and there was 40, you know, 10 awards, 40 nominations roughly, and about half of them were people we've put in over the years. And for me, that is, you know, gratification. We're doing a good job. We're not just trying to put people into jobs and then seeing how they work out. So
nicely done. Thank you, guys. So there's some really, really healthy conversation. We could probably go on for a lot longer on this. I'm very keen to delve into also what, you know, I guess we open up to the audience. If there are accreditations, if there are reward mechanisms that fit in line with what our guests are saying, then you post them below, let us know about them so that we can start to follow up on these. And, you know, I know the Soil Association has awards, and you've got sustainability restaurants as well, but you know, there might be unknown awards out there that we can start to look at, and accolades that we can get. One thing that's coming up in the UK very, very soon, I think next week, is the new budget. And UK Hospitality have asked for three specific things within that budget, and so we've got less than 5 minutes left. Just a recap on those elements before we pass it over to our guests. So they're looking at a 3% cap on business rates as opposed to the proposed 6.7%. Temporary changes to employer national insurance contributions as well, so to cut the lower rate of NICs, and also to lower the rate of VAT for hospitality. So What are our thoughts on those? Are we doing enough? Is there more that we can do? Or how do you feel that will impact your businesses?
Like lowering the rate of VAT. Sorry, salivating at hearing that. Like lower the rate of VAT. Yeah, that would be brilliant. Amazing. Like we definitely need it. But there's so many other factors that are just spiraling out of control. You know, like the overheads are insane for to do the smallest thing in a restaurant just costs a fortune. Anything to do with the heating, to do with any improvements, you know, any stuff that if you want to get someone to paint the inside of your restaurant, anything like that, it is eye-wateringly expensive. And I feel that there is no support out there as a small business. If you want to continue to kind of grow and develop, you have to put your prices up, and that's just it. There's no other funding out there that I can get to kind of fight and protect what we stand for, and it's disappointing. But the VAT is if that comes out, that would be great. Anything would be great. The sponsorship, I don't know if any of you guys have gone through trying to sponsor somebody because of the lack of the kind of traffic of young chefs and waiters we used to have before Brexit. Mm-hmm. So I've been trying to become a sponsor. To say it's complicated is disgraceful. Like the government and how they create this form to fill out is a joke. Like it's misleading all the way. I've been trying to do it now for months, to the extent where now I've got to pay an outside company to do it for me. And I just think, why? And I'm paying thousands of pounds to just potentially maybe be able to employ somebody outside of the UK. So I feel like that has got to be sorted. Like it's disgraceful to just have a casual worker come to work at my restaurant where I can prove that I will take care of them and I will pay them well. And the government just seem to want to just like not help at all. And everybody's having a problem with staffing.
Yeah, it's definitely one of our key stakeholders has been very successful in terms of looking at employment from South Africa, but it's not been easy. You know, there were visa holdups, etc. And obviously now with the new legislations changing and the minimum wage changing, you're looking at CDP or you know, inexperienced roles effectively getting paid. I think it was 38,000 now, which, you know, everyone should be paid a fair wage. But also there's 38,000 was more than I was on as a sales manager 3 years ago, 4 years ago. So, you know, it's just it's interesting. But I'll make a connection for you as well if that's helpful after this.
Yeah.
What about yourself, Will?
Yeah, well, they're just making it harder, aren't they, in terms of operating? Have you seen all the closures we had last year? I thought I'd bring up a quick stat before I jumped on today. And it was in Q4 of last year, there was 800 net closures. So that includes new openings of licensed businesses in the UK, which is staggering, really. I don't think many businesses, we're a supplier of hospitality, so we see it. And recruitment in terms of priorities of suppliers, we're quite low down. You know, it's a cost. People see it as a valuable cost, but we're one of the first to feel it. And we could see it back end of last year that the businesses are really struggling. That headroom they had, you know, which they'd usually invest in training and all the good stuff, you know, investing in the properties, investing in the people, they just haven't got it at the moment. They really haven't. You know, everything's going into food, utilities and everything else. So any of those three possibles from the government would be helpful. I think the NI, we're a labour intensive business, aren't we? At the end of the day, it's our you know, number one cost. So NI for employees came down last year, which is brilliant. But I think for employers as well, just a few percent on that would help. So it's tough out there.
Agreed. And for those, I was trying to explain, I'm just conscious of our audience. For those outside of the UK, I was trying to explain this to someone from America recently when they were asking about VAT and why is VAT such a big deal? So for those outside, obviously, any products that are bought in that are individual products, apples, oranges, you know, whatever it might be, wheats, all of these, you cannot claim VAT back. You cannot claim the tax back on as a business owner. Yet as soon as you put that into a made product, you have to claim, you have to pay the tax on it. So effectively, business owners are being hit by 20% before, yeah, and through no fault of their own, just because of the laws in the UK. So for context, for those who are listening or watching this, it's very much about the fact that we're just getting shafted as a hospitality industry from that particular angle. And it's quite a unique shafting, I would say, for that particular thing?
Well, it's on top of all the other raises last year, corporation tax from 19 to 25%. So as soon as you do make profit, that's like nearly, a 30% increase. Yeah. And it's just got forgotten about, you know. So if you do well, they just penalize you even more on top of business rates and everything else. So it just seems to be coming from all angles alongside things out of our control, you know, utility bills, you know, they've got to come down soon because the unit price is coming down, but no one's lobbying them, you know, Ofgem or whoever it is, lobbying them to bring it all down. It's a bit of a, I don't know, it's way above my pay grade, but something needs to happen and the government need to do more, you know, not just in taxations, but everything else.
Agreed. Guys, we are up on time and I could quite easily keep going, but for the sake of...
with a
15-minute
time limit.
I was sure, yeah.
It's so difficult. We've had some really interesting comments come through. Kieran Bailey has said, in fact, using modern technology, we can share these comments now. It's a beautiful moment in any business when the team recognise an opportunity to support one another and then smash it for the guest. I'm a huge believer in extreme ownership, and that Oyster example is a clear image of that action. So well done there, Anna, on that one. Here's a really nice one from John. I can assure you that customers at Myrtle know how much work you guys put in. While I'm not in hospitality, I want to try and give back. All the staff go above and beyond, and that's come straight from a customer directly. So that's really, really, really cool there. We have Leah. I think that more needs to be helped to get the younger generation into hospitality. They do not want the hard work, in quotes, but it doesn't have to be with 4 days of weeks or flexible hours with a full brigade. I was used to working 70, 80 hours a week when I was a chef, and I think so many of the younger generation are scared of that. That's really...
You should be scared of 70 hours. I'm scared of 70 hours, and I have to do it. You should be scared. I think people give the young generation a real hard time. I think we gloss over our memories of what we were like when we were young. But I think hospitality is the best job for a young person to enter into, because to work hard is not hard work. It's actually very enjoyable and really, really satisfying. And that's what we should be celebrating, that it's like to dedicate yourself and say, I'm going to give it 100%, not because someone's going to give out to me and I'm going to be fired, but because I've got this to give. That's really satisfying. That's what we should be doing, not like saying, you're not working as hard as I worked. It could be like, you've got more to give, you know, yourself. So apply yourself and you'll reap the rewards. It's a great job for young people.
They're enjoyable hours at work from my memories. You don't even feel the hours. It's not like working in an office like me. It's, a 10-hour day is, you know, it's good.
Well, what's that saying? Is if you find a job you love, like, I'm going to butcher it, but you find a job you love, it's not like work. Butcher, to use a hospitality term, it's not like you'll ever work a day in your life, right? And I think I think this whole 70, 80 hour, and I spoke to a chef with some decent accolades a couple of years ago. He was like, I disagree with the fact that you're trying to get everyone to work 40 hours a week. I said, no. I said, in the current pressures, 40 hours, 30 hours is probably great, but we also need to give individuals the chance to make a decision themselves. Like, if you enjoy working and you want to work 60, 70 hours, providing you've got everything else in balance, and there's no problems with that. So I don't think there's a one size fits all. And we've got to be careful, I think, with our sweeping statements, as Anna, you pointed out, just to say that, people, the younger generation, they're not capable, they're unwilling to do this. That's not necessarily, I think, the reality. I think we are potentially likely to become victims of our own perspective around these subject matters.
Yeah, definitely. And also, people think they want to do 60 hours, and then you see them do a couple of weeks of 60 hours, and they're like, I don't feel so good, chef. You know, but they say, I can do it, I love it, I'll do the hours. But the truth is, you know, as a human, if you have any type of outside life of your job, doing 60 hours is going to have a side effect on you. No matter how strong you think you are, something has to be massively sacrificed. So trying to keep those hours down is good, because it's, you know, there's more to life than burning yourself the stove.
Yeah, definitely. You can't, well, someone, I saw someone post recently, you can't keep others warm by torching yourself, right? It's not the done thing. I just, one final thing, and I so need to finish this off. I need to be disciplined and hold this to the time, because time is valuable. it's the first one, and I'm perhaps in hindsight, you know, 20 minutes would have been sufficient, but I've just got this one thing to share, and I would like just a couple of comments from Anna and from Will, please. We've had a comment come through from a chef. It's 4 a.m. I'm the executive chef already in my kitchen. Now, we talk about, Will, we talk about leadership, and we talk about being recognized for, you know, sustainability, etc. And Anna, obviously, you're a very successful chef patron and owner of a business yourself. So what would you say that if you're the first one in the kitchen at that time in the morning, Is that something that could be sustained? Is that something that should be sustained? What are your thoughts?
Well, I see that, and I think, oh gosh, there must be something really bad happening. It's not normal to be in your kitchen at 4 a.m. And in all the kitchens I worked in, which we would be there at 6 a.m., and which is in an ungodly hour to start work. But 4 a.m. is clearly there's some sort of breakfast shift, and that executive chef is going to have to get ready on their own, because nobody should be in their kitchen at 4 a.m. You just shouldn't. So there's something, I feel like when I saw that, I was like, I felt a little like stab in my chest when you're understaffed and you're overworked and you don't know what to do. So then you just think, I will sacrifice myself because there seems to be no other option. But there is other options, but in the moment you feel like there isn't.
Yeah, and we hear that a lot.
My point of view, I don't miss breakfast shifts, that's for sure. But no, I think in terms of, I mean, even if I was to think about myself in recruitment 5 years ago, I'd make a big thing about being the first in the office and the last one out. You know, even in recruitment office, I was getting in for 7:30. I'd be out the door at 7 p.m. This was before I had kids, so I don't know, I had less responsibilities and no school run. But I made a big thing of it, and I then expected my team to thrive off it, maybe, and I was leading by example. But I don't know, maybe COVID changed my mindset on everything, and kids came along at the same time as well. But I empower your team. We don't have set hours at Talent Hive. We understand that work affects personal lives and personal lives affects works. So we're flexible. You know, if you've got to do a school run, do a school run. If you need to go to a parents' evening, but we're lucky, we're an office-based industry. I know kitchens and hospitality has to be a little bit more rigid, but we don't. We do a 37 and a half hour week. And if someone needs to do extra, they do, because maybe their desk's a bit busier, but then take the time back again. But my days of doing 12-hour days have gone, and I feel a lot better for it, and a lot healthier for it, and I get to see my kids. And I think we should lead by example through businesses and expect the same as our staff, not trying to drive them through us, killing ourselves. It's not right.
Yeah, I agree. Right, I am going to end it, because we've still got comments coming through, and they're really, really, I mean, there's a lot of engagement coming through, which is just awesome. But I want to thank all of you for sharing your experience, sharing your viewpoints on this as well. And also for Cara for helping me host this and for putting this together. So guys, thank you ever so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Cheers. Thank you.